And welcome back. 21 hours later, we are with you once again for 3 hours of amazing radio. Tonight, a conversation with a true legend and one of the most extraordinary people on the planet. If there is a father of America's psychic research program and remote viewing, it is Ingo Swann. And Ingo is my guest. Next. Once in a while, not very often, I get a book. I get lots of books. I get a book that I can actually open to any page and start reading anywhere and learn something or be intrigued by something or otherwise be motivated by something that I read in those words. This is one of those books, Ingo Swann's newest book. It is called Secrets of Power. This is Volume 1, Individual Empowerment versus the Societal Panorama of Power and Depowerment. We're going to talk tonight about some amazing concepts. Not theory, amazing realities of power. It's all about power. Those who don't have it want it. Those who have it want more. Nobody's ever happy. Ingo Swann has been on the program several times in the past. His prior appearances are in the archives, which go back to 1997. All the programs I've done are available for you around the clock, 24 hours a day. In addition, of course, you can get tape cassettes of our program. We'll tell you about that as we go along tonight. I am doing this program now 7.5 years, I think. And there are so many people I've had on who are legitimately unique in their own right. And this man who is on the phone live from New York is one of my favorite people to talk to. He uses his mind. Sometimes I think he's using everybody's mind. It's a little inside joke there, and Ingo's probably chuckling. At least he better be. But he is with us tonight, and I'm really glad to spend time with him. Hello, Ingo.
Hello, Jeff.
You are, in a way, aren't you, using everybody's minds? We all are.
Well, I think everybody's minds are somehow connected.
That's the point.
At some, I don't know, mysterious way, interesting way. Unfortunately, nobody's ever really looked into that too much.
Well, you have, and you have a sense of it all that is more than profound. We will talk about many things tonight. The book is, again, Secrets of Power. It's all about power. We're going to talk about what power is. You'll be surprised to learn how many different forms, facets, and components of power Ingo has so brilliantly isolated and laid out. It's a banquet for the mind in his book, Secrets of Power. It's an easy read, but again, every paragraph, every sentence, in most cases, is remarkable. There is an old expression, my friend, and it is that a mind is a terrible thing to waste. And I really, after looking through the book at great length, that one thought popped into my mind. That old expression, rather trite and cliched, but it's true. We have this marvelous gift, and it is said that we use 5, 10, 15% of it. But when I see our young people, and when you go out amongst them and watch them having their minds literally, I don't want to use the cliche dumbed down, but I will because it's handy. Watch people engaging in the media, whether it be rock music, pop culture, peer pressure, chit-chat, drugs, television, movies, images in magazines. I see all of those things in a way, Ingo, as stealing one's time, stealing one's life. They're thieves. And so many of our young people now are products of what they think they ought to be, these terribly ratty amalgamations of images and icons and ideas and concepts that they pick up and extract from their experiential time on this planet to somehow give themselves power amongst their contemporaries. At least they think it does. So on that, I will open the door to you, Ingo Swann. Was that all right?
Yeah, I guess so. That's a big picture you painted.
I'm not the artist you are, but...
No. Where should I start, Jeff? Should I start with when I first got interested in power?
I think that's a good place to go. And by the way, any of you wondering about Ingo's art, he is a magnificent artist of some great renown at this point. His work's become more and more popular all the time. And we'll tell you how to get a look at some of those things, too. All right, go ahead. Yeah, I think so, Ingo. When you began to deal with power, we usually, I think, as a society, think of power as those who have it and those that don't. That's kind of just a simple-minded reflex, but that's common.
No, yes and no. I would more say that when we think of power, we think of those who have it. And those that don't have it, we don't think of because they're not interesting since they don't have power.
Well, those that don't have it would dwell on that.
No, I've had talked through many years to people who don't have power, the powerless, you know. And they realize they don't have it, but when they talk about power, they don't talk about themselves not having it. They talk about who has it, and usually how they misuse it and hit everybody over the head with it and things like that.
Yeah, and there are a lot of victims out there today.
And one of the points in my book is that why the powerless are powerless has never been examined.
And we shall do so tonight and
okay. In
greater detail in your book. Let us right now, just for fun, put out how the book can be purchased, so we'll refer to that as we go along tonight.
Oh, it's a self-published book because no publisher would touch it.
You've been there before, though.
And individuals that are interested can order it through a toll-free number, and that is 1-888-453-4046.
All right, we've got it. That's 888, toll-free, 453-4046. Okay, this book is... anyone who's interested in how the game is played cannot be without this book. It's that simple. Go ahead.
Well, thank you. I got interested in power when I was a child because I was born in a small town in Colorado named Telluride, which today, of course, is a famous... resort.
Yeah. High elevation, too, isn't it?
Yes, it's over 9,000 feet. Yeah. But at that time, it was hard to get to. It was a mining town, which had gradually gone downhill, and there were 210 people in it.
They had a railroad, which may
have... Yes, and my grandfather worked on that railroad. One of my grandfathers did.
Oh, wonderful.
And I used to... knew all about the railroads and things like that. But I spent a lot of time with my two grandmothers, and what they did, spent a great time, part of their time doing, was watching people. They'd sit on their front porches and watch people and talk about them, and my mother's mother had a pickup truck, and we'd go up and sit in front of the drugstore and get a banana split and sit in her pickup truck and watch the people on the street, and everybody, there were... Throughout the whole town, it seemed like the major topic of power, topic of discussion was who had power and who didn't.
How funny. Now, here we have a town, Ingo. Now, you'd go in and sit in the pickup truck, 210 people there.
Right.
That means you were able, you and your grandmothers, and you were able to watch 207 other people or thereabout.
Well,
and see how this little microcosm of power was
right,
laid out.
Right, but there were a lot of... miners that came to work in the mines at various times, and so there were three or four boarding houses, and my mother's mother had one of those. And so there
really?
Was...
Really? So you got to see things...
Yeah.
How fascinating. All right, now give me an idea of what it was like, young Ingo, now seriously, I want to do this, sitting in the truck, having your treats, and watching people.
Watching people, yeah. And nobody talked about what people were wearing, because... You know, it was a rather poor town, and or what people ate, or which people went to the movies and which didn't. there was always this talk about how the people interacted with each other, and basically those that didn't interact very well were considered powerless, and those that did interact had different kinds of power, you know. And there was it was just fascinating, and if you sit around in the parks here in New York, you know, you can watch people. And if you're attuned to watching people, you can tell a great deal about them just by watching them in a way. So my grandmothers, and their cronies, by the way, a large group of other elderly ladies, more or less, by example, taught me how to people watch.
Wow.
And that made me always very interested in, not in how people behaved, but in people, what they were, you know. And so they were always talking about these power things, you know, and they could be, you know, they made jokes out of it, and it was just a lively thing to do. This was a time before radio was even listened to very much, right, in the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
And when we listened to the radio, we listened to the war news, and that was about all there was to listen to. TV wasn't there, so people had to entertain themselves, and what they did was sit around and watch people and talk about them.
Oh,
so
funny.
That's how I got interested in power. And that stayed with me all my life. And as I grew up and things, and I had a very good position in the military when I was in Korea at helping. I was an aide at four generals and things. I could see power. I mean, an army general on the field is powerful, right?
You bet.
And there were all these other soldiers who weren't powerful, so to speak. And
it's about the most blatant demarcation of power you'll see is in a military situation.
Well, yes, and these guys who got 2 stars or 3 stars, and General I.D. White at the time had 4 stars, you know, and he was a little tiny guy. He wasn't more than 5'5" tall.
He had Napoleon beat by an inch or so.
Well, I mean,
yeah,
he had power. I mean,
yeah.
People just backed away, and, you know, I mean, it wasn't his rank particularly. And then years after I got out of the Army, I worked in the United Nations for 12 years. And there, of course, that's where power is decided upon. Anyway, so I had the opportunity of watching the world, international world organization, and how power was dealt with and traded within the UN, and who had it and who didn't have it, and all of the things that went on behind the scenes, and the secret manipulations of power, and so forth and so on.
Wow. Just
stand
by and go.
Okay.
Our cosmic music is...
Oh, I love that music.
Thank you. Yes, the UN, a commodity brokerage for power and backroom deals. Wow, what an incredible education. Ingo's book is dedicated in memorial to his grandmothers, Marie Swan Johnson and Anna Gerboth Paul, who first nurtured my perceiving of the workings of power beyond the merely fashionable and conventional. Ingo Swan, The Secrets of Power, his new book, Volume 1, and we shall continue.
Stay tuned for more Phenomenal Talk with Jeff Rentz.
Inside cover of Ingo's book, Secrets of Power. And, you know, this book, I can see why no one wanted to touch it. This is really, this has it all. This is the holy grail of power. This is how it works. This is what it's all about. There's so many interesting quotes in the book. Andrew Young has, well, I like this, it sort of fits right in here. You watched The Captains of Power at the UN, which, of course, reflect the captains of industry. because they are pulling the strings in many cases. Nothing is illegal if 100 businessmen decide to do it.
That's right.
And that's true anywhere in the world. And I've got to follow this real quick.
Right.
Yeah. Let me follow this with Aristotle Onassis' remark, which says it all. Here is what Aristotle said. He said, the rules are, there are no rules.
That's right.
Boy, that's nothing. I've never read anything more true than that.
Yeah, that's at the top of the power structures. There are no rules. The rules are made by those who decide to make them.
On the spot?
On the spot sometimes, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we were at the United Nations for 10 years.
Yeah, I had the pleasure of meeting Andrew Young at the United Nations 3 or 4 times, you know.
He's an interesting man. I didn't know too much about him except what the media would show me, but... nobody's fool, that guy. He's smart.
Nobody's fool, and he hasn't ever had the acknowledgement that he deserves as a worker for international peace, I think. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
After I left the United Nations, my career in parapsychology research bloomed and blossomed.
To say the least.
And you talk about psychic powers, well, you're talking about a format of powers. And although I admire many parapsychologists, you know, I mean, the field itself is, by definition, a sort of a mess, you know.
Yes.
And so I sort of had my work cut out, you know. Nobody in parapsychology believed that a psychic gift could be taught or could be activated in a person by artificial means or any means at all. It was, at that time, in 1970, was still considered a natural gift. You either had it or you didn't have it.
Yeah, now they're selling it kits in Walmart.
And I took great exception to that finally, and I says, you know, you can see my little abilities beginning to grow here because we're using them every day. We're putting them to the challenge and things, and they're getting better and better. And so there's a learning curve of something going on here, and that places it just in the category of any other power or ability that we can think of in our human species. An ability is a power that has been brought to the surface and nurtured and perfected. And so I had the idea to be able to discuss this better, to find an encyclopedia of human abilities. And it gradually dawned on me after about 3 months of trying to find one of these, there's no such thing existed. There is not an encyclopedia of human abilities or human powers.
Mm.
And I thought that this was really strange in a culture, a world culture that has encyclopedias of just about everything else you can think of. You know, we have encyclopedias of sea slugs and really unusual aquatic life. We have encyclopedias of stars. And we have encyclopedias of food. And we have encyclopedias of everything else. But we don't. There was no encyclopedia of human abilities and powers. So there was no place a person could go to see what kind of powers and abilities really existed.
True enough. True enough. Stand by right there, and we'll take as our short segment just concluded. Now we'll be back for a much longer one with Ingo. And his book, Secrets of Power, first book I've ever seen like it. Oh, people have been writing books about power for a long time, but no one's written one like this one. 888-453-4046. We'll be right back. Back. with Ingo Swann. And again, I refer you to my program archives. Go back and listen to the shows that Ingo and I have done in the past, and prepare to be amazed at some of the things that this man has experienced, seen, and processed, as it were. And as I said in the beginning, anywhere I open the book up to, let me give you all an example. I just opened the book here. I don't think there was anything psychic involved, Ingo. I just literally opened the book. Although there are no accidents or coincidences, right? Or are they?
Yeah.
This is this chapter I'm looking at is called "The Depowered Are Still Carriers of Power." This is very, very important to consider when we're looking at our society and what state it's in now. And Ingo says, hypothetically speaking, if via depowerment measures one's power volume has been turned down too low, one will be unable to sense power, or at least not very well. Further, if the power energy level has been turned down or reduced in important ways, one might no longer even have the smallest hint of power energy reserves. As a collective, these then would constitute those who feel they are powerless, because even if they can still sense the powers within them, they can neither hear, feel, nor sense what those powers are. They cannot know what they, as living, animated, and animating humans, are still carriers of power. Just open it up anywhere. Yeah, it's a marvelous survey. I think it's actually kind of a dangerous book in a way. The only thing that saves us all from having the book burned, as it were, is that I think most Americans are unable to read anymore. So, I think we're safe.
Well, okay.
This is the first encyclopedia of power.
It's an approach to an encyclopedia, and I hope in the future everybody else will start adding to it. When I couldn't find an encyclopedia of human abilities, I said, well, you know, one has to pull oneself up by one's bootstraps, so I started making a list of human abilities and powers, and that actually was the backbone of the manuscript I presented to publishers. It was a book called Do You Know What Your Powers Are? And most people don't know what their powers are. And in fact, I didn't even know what a lot of mine were at the time. But if you think it through, you can make a list of powers or assumed powers that belong to our species, and then you can see the condition of each of these things within oneself. And I had put some societal material in that book and some really astonishing things about power. So when I decided to publish the book myself, I broke it into three parts, and I expanded all three parts. And so, you know, if you want to empower yourself, you have nowhere to go to learn what it is that you should empower. I found there were no encyclopedias about human abilities and powers, and this automatically led to the discovery that there's no schools about power or empowerment. We don't have such things.
Mm.
Tony
Robbins' courses notwithstanding.
Well, I mean, you know, people get part of the picture, and all of the pictures you can dream up about power are probably relevant in some way, you
mm-hmm,
know,
mm-hmm.
if you go deep enough.
Sure.
And so I decided I would expand the single book into three books, and I'm now getting ready to publish the second volume this summer at some point. And then there will be a third volume. The second volume is entitled The Vitalizing of Individual Powers. And the third volume is entitled Sympathetic Vibrations and Empowerment.
Hmm.
And the reason I decided to publish these myself, you know, is you learn a lot about everything and you can't get it into the system by hook or crook, and I decided, well, I'm just going to write it all out for what it's worth to those who can get something from it. I mean, you know, you shouldn't study something for 40 years and just then toss it away.
No, of course. It's just,
I don't think anybody should do that.
Agreed.
And I've interviewed all kinds of people. I've interviewed the elderly about their sense of power, and I've interviewed homeless people in the street here in New York. And, you know, they just were delighted to be able to unload their own concepts in this realm, because there's no way they can do that otherwise. You know, you can't really talk about what power really consists of, because you're confined in sociological terms just to discussing the powerful.
True.
And that's the end of the story there.
That's what all our pop media, our pop culture is all about, alleged power.
Well, it's been that way for several centuries.
No, and that's another point you make here in the book so eloquently, that the decertifying of power from the masses has been, I guess, the oldest mechanism and subversion and oppression of them all.
Well, that's absolutely true, but there's another aspect to it that's a certifying aspect too. You know, if the powerful didn't have the powerless to have power over, then there would be no power.
Profound statement. We'll think about that, take a break, and come right back with Ingo Swann.
Stay tuned for more Phenomenal Talk with Jeff Rentz. You're listening to Jeff Rentz. And now, here's Jeff.
Hi, we're back with Ingo Swann and his book, The Secrets of Power. 1-888-453-4046, 888-453-4046. I'm Jeff Rentz. If you just joined us here with you, 80 hours a month, live radio, 3 hours a night, 6 nights a week, coast to coast, and of course on the internet as well, worldwide. Hello to all of you folks scattered around this troubled globe of ours. Glad you were here tonight. My website at Rentz.com, R-E-N-S-E, Rentz.com. A 24-hour, 7-day-a-week news service unlike no other on the planet. I put everything up there I can get my hands on that I think you ought to take a look at. Some of it's fun. Some of it is profoundly disturbing. It is all important in one way or another, so I hope you can stop by. All right, Ingo. You want to revisit that statement you made just before the break?
The powerful have to have people to have power over, or they don't have any power. And so the concept of the powerful can become institutionalized, but the concept of the powerless and the depowered is necessary to institutionalize the powerful concept. So if the powerful don't have people to have power over, then they don't have power. So it's in the interest of the powerful to build a class of people that are powerless so they can have power over them. And this has been going on for a long time. And so the existence of the powerless is necessary for the powerful in order to have something powerful over. And so the powerless class, or the powerless portion of people, it's a vested interest of the powerful to keep them powerless. And this is why there are no encyclopedias about power and no power schools. And I probably repeat this too much in this book, but nonetheless, it's true. If everybody was powerful, then how would we have the power structures that we have on Earth today? We wouldn't have them at all. There'd have to be some other kind of interaction or arrangement between people. But the existing arrangement in power structures is that the power belongs to the few at the top of the power structure, and that must have powerless, a great base of powerless people in order to have power. It's really simple when you put it out in a diagram, which I've done several ways throughout the book.
You have. This first one, figure one, is a great one. It's amazing how you've given this so much brilliant analytical thought, and it's all there. It's all feeding right up to power.
Yes. I got very angry in the past about all this, but, you know, you can get above it, and you begin to realize that the powerless classes are necessary, and they must be maintained as that, or it upsets the power balance in a power structure.
We couldn't have a structure with no power. No power concentrations, shall we say.
That's right. So, if a person in the powerless space, powerless person wants to empower themselves, they can read all kinds of books and so forth and so on, but they're still going to run up against this hidden system, this secret system of the fact that power structures don't want very many people to have access to power. And so you can read about power structures all you want, and you still will not find the empowerment route, because the one thing that is not examined and is not gone into is why are the powerless people powerless? They shouldn't be powerless, but they've been nurtured to be powerless on behalf of maintaining the typical pyramidal power structure.
Nurtured including programming, mind control, mind influencing, brainwashing, economic suppression, all of it. It's all in its totality.
There are even a few good conventional books that mention the fact that the majority of people must be mind modeled to accept their powerless place in the power structure.
Sure.
And that actually does happen, you know. And so if you know what's going on in this power systems, then you have a better chance of empowering yourself. And if you don't realize what's really going on, you're just going to get knocked over the head any number of times.
By power?
Well, by the resistance in the society to... There's a resistance... Well, there's a non-educated... You have to be educated with what you're dealing with, right?
Sure.
If you're going to conquer unknown territory, you need to know what the territory looks like.
Always helps.
Yeah, get too far. Mm-hmm. So this first volume is what the territory looks like regarding power and powerlessness. And it's very easy to describe what the powerful and the top of the power structures consist of, but nobody's ever made an attempt to describe what the powerless part of that is composed of. And that's fascinating once you get into it.
All right, let's talk about the powerless, the disempowered, those who have been mind-modeled, at least not to think they have any power, which de facto makes them powerless, whether they want to or not.
That's right. That's part of it.
Is there happiness in being without power? I guess there can be happiness at anywhere along the spectrum.
Well, until the 20th century, especially in the 18th and 19th century, you know, the general population was taught to be content with their lot. That's what it was called.
Mm-hmm.
Be content with where you are and make the most of it, you know. Don't make any noises about ascending the power ladder. In the 20th century, how to ascend the power ladder became more pronounced and things like that. But the point of a pyramid power structure is that the top is governed by a very few powerful people. And so amongst the masses, if, say, 2,000 tried to get to the top of the power structure where there's only room for one or two or three, mm-hmm. then that many people are going to be defeated in their empowerment process as long as it's in within that societal pattern.
Right.
So you don't have a chance, you know. It's not may the best man win anymore. It's just that there isn't room
within
these societal structures for that many people.
It truly is the impossible dream, then.
Yeah.
It's impossible.
But you can always better your lot. In the 20th century, you know, it became a mandatory to have a higher educated powerless base. You know, they needed to run machines and become technological and things so you could better your lot. But you weren't supposed to better your power.
It's a very funny dichotomy there. You're right.
And it, you know, you can pull it apart. There are these little layers of power that are overlaid of each other,
right.
Overlay each other, and to be content with your lot, and you know, and in the latter half of the 20th century, you know, everybody could get a credit card, so they could live in a debt economy, and that made them feel okay and content with their lot, you know. But still, the top of power structure in the worldwide, you know, only about 5% or less of people alive at any given time have power, and the rest are subservient in some fashion to those few.
Your remark about credit cards is particularly cutting, because for many people, every time they use that card, they are literally divesting themselves of a bit more of their power, as it were.
Well, in a way, it's the...
It's a different thing. We're talking about two bumper stickers here. One of them says,
right,
he who has the most toys wins, and the other bumper sticker says, he who has the most power wins. There's two different things here.
Well, he... as he who doesn't play by the rules wins, as Aristotle Onassis said.
Yeah, I want that's the bumper sticker I want. Ari was right,
yeah, in many ways, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, my purpose in putting all this in book one, it's a big mess. It's a big network of confused stuff going on and everything. And all I did was pull it apart and label it, all of the things that are in it, one by one by one, so you can at least have an idea of how to negotiate through this mess.
Never seen it done before, Ingo. You did surgically pull it up. You pulled the beast apart.
Well,
this is a dissection.
It's a dissection.
It's not an autopsy. It's a dissection.
Right. You know, it's like, when I was a kid, I liked to know how things were built, you know, and I'd take things apart and put them back together again, like clocks and even the piano that my parents had bought. It came home one day, and here it was all laying all over the house in its 3,000 parts.
Oh, my.
And I put it back together again, finally.
Or else.
But I didn't know how to tune it, so my father had to get a tuner up and from Grand Junction, Colorado, to do that, and that cost $45. And
on the train?
No, he drove.
No.
Some truck and things like that. But I got it back together perfectly. I just didn't know how to tune it.
How old were you?
I was about 8 at the time.
That's amazing. You took all the strings out?
Yep.
And you got them all back?
Yep.
How did you know which one went where? Did you label them?
No, I mean, I took it apart in order. I put it back in reverse order. It was that simple.
Well, I wish I would have been there to see the reaction.
That was one of the 3 times my father took me out to the coal shed.
Oh.
We had a serious talk. And I said, well, I'll put it back together. You can do that in any kind of research, you know. I mean, that's what biologists do. They take things apart and put them back together. And,
yeah.
You know, it's...
It doesn't work on living animals, though.
Well, I mean, you can get it back together again, but you can't tune it.
You went to the coal shed?
Yes.
Were you able to sit down for dinner that night?
Yes.
You made a deal?
No.
Oh, I see. You paid the price. And then you... high drama in Telluride. That's a great story.
High drama in Telluride.
How many pianos were there in Telluride back then?
Oh, there were a few. You know, everybody had one, more or less, because at the turn of the century, every house had a piano because people had to entertain themselves.
No record players.
Well, record players did come along eventually. But
they were people who had music within them, and they played music,
right,
and that was the music.
Right. They had accordions. I took an accordion apart once, too.
Now, I see an accordion is an instrument that has all but evaporated, but I remember as a kid, a lot of people took accordion lessons.
You bet.
No
I
more.
Did. I did.
All right, stand by. we'll be back with Ingo Swan and talk more about power in this world of ours, his book Secrets of Power, Volume 1, Individual Empowerment Versus the Societal Panorama of Power and Depowerment. And he's got it all laid out here. Be right back.